Man 6, did you pass the medical and the commission interview?
We passed, all three of us passed the commission interview. We had to wait outside and were called in, having previously been before each of the colonels in turn, asked more or less the same questions, but we passed for commission rank. Went back to Catwater, then waited a week or two more, and was called to the medical board at Hampstead. We were there all day after arrival, mostly in the nude, going from room to room before different doctors. In one room we were taken for the nerve tests. One particular nerve test, if I might repeat it, was a lead weight was brought, and you stood against a wall and a lead weight was brought and touched your nose. The doctor went the other side and threw this at you, but unbeknown to you there was a sergeant with a little winch, but when it came towards your nose he winched it up above. There was no elaborate affairs like we got today for testing nerve. That was one of the tests. You were put in a kind of a spinning wheel in
so
chairs.
So you didn't have to duck if this thing
no,
came
well,
at
if you.
You
ducked, that went against you a little bit. And then we were put in a kind of a spinning wheel, in three of us in chairs, and strapped in, and it was spun around, and then a doctor got old and felt your pulse when it was finished and put his old sticker on your heart and so on. We were put in a lift and rushed up and down in the dark, and like revolvers firing, and the same thing, pulse and whatever they wanted to take. You had to stand with your eyes closed, and a doctor looked at your fingers twitching, or whatever was happening to each finger in turn, on your thumb and so on. And that was in one room alone. You'd had all the other medical stuff, ears and eyes, and it was a stiff examination. Well, then after all this business, late in the afternoon, we were in two lines. They'd come from all different stations for this, and direct from the public schools, mostly. There was us few servicemen mixed in. And then they came along, or the duty doctor and NCOs and that, and if you got a certain coloured card, you'd passed, the other colour you'd failed. So everybody was watching this come down and wondering what card. Well, I got the card. I believe it was a white card. I was the only one out of us three from Catwater who passed the medical. So then we all went back, and I had to wait until I was called. I was then called and fitted out with, not officer's uniform, with the Air Force khaki. Blue didn't come in for some time later. The war was finished when the blue came in, as far as I know. And away I went to East Sandling Camp, OTOX they called it, for my first course of the Officers Cadet Brigade. And I passed OTOX, three exams, the first one, the intermediate, and the last one. And as I was a serviceman considered, the rest in my hut were all from public schools, or Guy's Hospital, or Canadians come over, or something. I was in charge of our hut, anyway. Then we went on to the next school. We had brought in topography and morsing and all that, because I've been passed as a pilot and observer, with the prospects of going on a seaplane, seeing I was 6'1". And they did take a little account towards the end of the pilots' size and so on. And I passed this school, but halfway through, I was called in with two others into Captain King's office, and he said, "You're taking the exam that could fail you and return you to unit. if you get by this, you're all right. We still have to give you a few more extra chances. Like, if you fail the next one, we get put you through for the next, exam. And he said, and I'd like to tell all three of you that you've got 100% for sport. Now, you're sportsmen. I'm not wanting you to do badly or try to do badly or not to care. But I thought I'd tell you before you went to the exam. Because I'd been tipped off, as a matter of fact, by one of the lads who come back who had failed. He said, you want to go in for all sport, you know. Well, I was that way inclined. I was a good runner and all this. So I played rugby. I played for the squadron, was picked for the wing, was picked for the brigade, and had there been an Air Force, probably should have been picked for the Air Force team. But it was... we played quite a number of games coming to the end of the school, and we played for the squadron, the wing, the brigade all in 1 week. And of course we're playing our type of rugby, and I was picked for the brigade with three others from our squadron to play against Folkestone. And I'm certain that the captain of our team, I feel certain in my mind, was W.W. Wakefield. And Wakefield passed to me. I surged forward, but was caught by a flying tackle and had both my knees put out. I finished up in hospital with fluid on one of them. This finished my rugby, although later I did run for the squadron in the marathon and the cross country. I also boxed middleweight at 11 stone 6. Or any other sport that was going, I joined in. That's all I can say about my sporting side there.
Did you get a permanent commission then?
No, what happened then? The war finished. So I still had a bit to do, just a little bit to do, and then the flying school for a pilot. So everything were sixes and sevens, of course. You can understand that. Apparently on ceremonial parade, we had these ceremonial parades. Our colonel was told, he was on his horse, and a message came to tell him the war had finished. But he didn't let on till the afternoon. He thought everybody would go mad or something or other if they got the news, you see. So he let on in the afternoon, and everybody then floated ashore, as I call the term ashore. We went to Folkestone and what have you. And we had quite a few colonials with us. They'd come over, and some had come from the Canadian forces to go through into this new flying business. And a mistake was made by our red caps, actually. They put one of the Canadian boys, who was drunk and disorderly, on return in the guard room. Immediately, like one man, all those Canadians, whatever rank or walk of life they came from, came together as one man and demanded that he was let out from the guard room. If not, they'd burn the place down. And, of course, it was a silly thing to do, really, on a night like that, to, you know, one had to just let the thing pass over, provided nobody was breaking or damaging anything. And so they let him out, and quietness set in again. Well, immediately following this finish, Armistice, the mob started. All the lads who had come from college, public schools or what have you, Canadians and all that, were demobbed. demobilisation started. Now, I was made cadet orderly sergeant. In other words, we had a permanent staff. I was a cadet orderly sergeant. And we had a major, a cavalry man, Major Slaney. And he wanted me to do the job. He also recommended me for a permanent commission. And I agreed. And it was accepted that I could stay on, complete my course for a permanent second lieutenancy. As it was then, they later done away with that rank when they brought in the pilot officer and flying officer business. And I was busy with him and the staff engaging in demobilisation, and I was more or less a bright boy with the colonials. They wanted to go to London weekend, the final fling before they went, and providing I kept them off of routine duties, they were able to do it, you see, and get leave for the weekend. So I done what I could, and we still done water party and all that business, you see. It still had to carry on. And they were demobbed as fast as could be. Some of these colonials overstayed their leave, which meant that I had to march them in when they did arrive and to be sentenced, which didn't mean a thing because they were just waiting for transport and all this business to get them back to Australia, New Zealand, Canada, South Africa, what have you. And when this gradually closed in, we moved, or they moved, personnel from one wing to our wing, or from different wings in England, so as to finish up at one spot, you see, close down the huts and all the rest of it. Well, I couldn't see the end of things or the prospects of the new force. And although I'd been recommended and accepted, I felt in the end that I'd had enough. So I applied then, as it was drawing to a close, this demob business, to ask for demobilisation. This was a little bit difficult because I had accepted. Anyway, it was agreed, and I was demobilised, unknowingly at the time, as a honorary second lieutenant. Honorary. Now, that brought me back onto NCO's gratuity. Now, all the Canadians, Australians and that, were made full lieutenants or lieutenants right away, where providing they were so far along their course at the cadets, you see. And they got second lieutenant's gratuity and all that. But we're the imperial, so, you know, army's business, and somebody had this bright idea. So there you are. I'm a honorary second lieutenant for life. I can wear the uniform on any ceremonial occasion. I must not accept any or expect any money, but on the should hostilities start, I can rejoin according to the requirements at officer rank, according to the requirements. If there's no more officers wanted, then I couldn't rejoin. That is more or less what the Honorary Commission is. And but I'm proud of it, rather. You see, and I think the 100% support had something to do with it, and Slaney's recommendation, because I worked hard as an honest demob and all the rest of it.
When you left the Royal Air Force, did you have any further connection with boats or with aviation?
Well, yes, both actually. But in the first place, on the aeronautical side, places were closing down. I first went to Mayhard and May's aircraft factory at Hythe, where they were building F-5s, actually, just in my line of business. But within a few months, they closed down completely, because it was more or less government control, government contracts, you see. Other places were getting smaller in the aeronautical field. The Supermarine, the inspector in charge, it got down to one man. That is the Aeronautical Inspection Department. It come down to one man, and so on. And it was getting smaller. So I went back into the yacht yards. First of all, at Summers and Payne's, opened his boat shop for him after the war. Built a dinghy and a rater. The dinghy went to the first Olympia boat show after the First World War. I got a very highly commend for it. And then he suddenly closed down, because he had work, like other shipyards, putting boats that had been loaned to the government for the war back into the condition they had been received. That was part of the agreement. But then, in a couple of years, this all began to fizzle out, shall I say. And so he closed out.